Welcome. I'm Cecilia Hilke.
And I'm Jason Hilke.
Welcome to Happily Family. We are delighted today to have Jenna Wolf with us. Jenna helps families who are breastfeeding beyond babyhood to create breastfeeding and weaning relationships where everyone thrives. She's a certified lactation counselor, certified Pure Joy parent coach, and has completed Happily Family's parent coach training. She works with moms and parents to tune into their innate wisdom while she supports their parenting journey and mental wellness. Welcome, Jenna. It's great to have you.
Thanks for being here, Jenna.
I'm so excited to be here today.
So fun to talk to you about these things.
I wanted to ask you, because I know you specialize in breastfeeding, and it seems like, because our kids are older now, but it seems like every decade, there's like a little more awareness, a little more support. So yay, we've gotten this far. And yet at the same time, there's so much more work that needs to be done. And I wanted to ask specifically about like extended breastfeeding, because it's still in some pockets, I'm sure feels a little countercultural or a little like alternative for parents that are considering something that feels countercultural or alternative. What are some of the messages that they might get out there and how can they respond to those?
And can we also just define extended breastfeeding for people that may not know exactly what we're talking about?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about all of that. So I'll define it. And if I need to come back, if you need to just remind me on the messages part, do so. So extended breastfeeding, typically the definition is breastfeeding past a year. Really though, we can use extended breastfeeding to talk about breastfeeding past a time that would be deemed culturally appropriate to wean. So we know that the World Health Organization, the Canadian Pediatric Society, the National Health Service, and the American Academy of Pediatrics all recommend breastfeeding to 2 years and beyond. So that's the recommendations. But in practice, we know that it's typically not happening in the Western world. That being said, globally, about half of two-year-olds around the world are still, quote, being breastfed. So it, we know that it's important. We know that it's recommended. And we know that it's happening, but also not happening. So like locally where I live, we have some of the lowest breastfeeding rates. Like I live in Canada and the county that I live in Ontario, we have the lowest breastfeeding rates in the province. And so only 50% of people leaving the hospital are breastfeeding from like birth, right? So I believe that the statistics just get lower and lower. So like 2 months, it's like 25% of people. So by a year, we're talking very low numbers. And all of that kind of, creates this cultural soup that we're in, where we have a lot of beliefs and ideas about what breastfeeding is, why kids are breastfeeding, what it means to breastfeed, what the potential outcomes in the future are if you are breastfeeding or aren't breastfeeding. So many stories that we have, which does kind of play back into your question, Cecilia, which was these messages. But I just want to say that extended breastfeeding, it's kind of, it is and it isn't. There's no point where breastfeeding is no longer natural or no longer important, or breast milk expires or stops providing nutrition or immunological benefits. In fact, we know that a lot of those things actually increase over time, the duration of breastfeeding. So breast milk at 6 months looks different than it does at 12 months, looks different than it does at 18 months, at 24 months, and so on. So it's actually adapting to meet your child's needs as they're growing, and it never stops. We don't have any point in time where it's like, this is actually too long to be breastfeeding, your child's too attached to it, or it's harming them in any way. We don't have any evidence that there's any point that it becomes harmful, bad, or wrong. So just to clarify, I don't like using the word extended breastfeeding. A lot of people will use words like full term breastfeeding, natural term weaning. I typically go with toddler breastfeeding because that's often who my audience is in that like 2, 3, 4 age range. But yeah, so that's that kind of definition. And I think it's important. So I wanted to spend a little time really clarifying that. So then the messaging that we get, right? People think that breast milk turns to water after a certain point of time. I'm using a lot of quotation air quotes. So because it's just like the things I hear, these quotations. So breast milk turns to water. Your child's too attached. They're wanting it too much. It can be a concern that they're not getting adequate nutrition. So they're breastfeeding more than they're eating solids. This must be a problem. When in actual fact, we know that breast milk between the ages of 12 and 24 months, so like being made in that time, you know, it has 47% of the protein that a child needs in that time, not to mention like calories, fat, immunological factors, like I said, vitamin A. It's an incredibly important source of vitamin A, vitamin C, you know, all of these different things, so many, it still continues to provide that. So breast milk is actually really, really nutrient dense, right? But that's a message that we hear, is that we need to cut back on breastfeeding so that they eat more solid foods. We hear that your child, you need to night wean them or they're not going to sleep through the night. You know, so many things that we can hear. And when it comes to kind of combating those messages that we're hearing, I think that there's really two kind of pathways that we can take. And one is like internally educating and like fortifying ourselves, saying like, this is my choice. This is what's serving me and my child right now. And tuning back into that and not getting too far into the future in our minds and stories or into the past of, you know, well, how long did my mom breastfeed or what do all these things mean, right? And it's kind of staying present with your child and knowing that you're just meeting your child's needs the best way that you can. And over time, your child's ability to meet those needs and other tools that we can use to meet those needs, they're going to come, right? As your child develops over time and as your relationship matures with your child. So that's one way. And then the other way would be actually confronting those messages and with the people that you're talking to, which might mean setting some boundaries. Hey, I'm not going to have this conversation. We're not going to talk like this isn't up for discussion. We're not going to talk about that. It could mean pointing them to resources, to education themselves, right? I've personally gone into the pediatrician with my son who was breastfeeding at 15 months and he was sick. And I said he wasn't eating a lot, but he was still having breast milk. So I was reporting it as something that was beneficial and good. And I was grateful for it. And the pediatrician kind of cuts me off. He's like, you know, you don't have to keep doing that, right? And there's a time where for me, it's like the Canadian Pediatric Society, like the people who create the recommendations that you're supposed to be giving, right? They recommend breastfeeding for 2 years and beyond. So you're not really listening to your own governing bodies, right? So there's a time and a place to say, hey, actually, this is what the evidence says. And if that feels good for you, then do that, that kind of education piece. And then on the flip side, you can also flip it around. If you feel like you have the space to hold for that person, it's A-okay to say, hey, why are you, like, why does it matter to you? What's going on with you, right? And sometimes there's an opportunity for connection. Sometimes there's an opportunity for something really interesting to come from that too. So yeah, when we're talking about dealing with kind of those external messages, one is to brace yourself kind of internally, fortify that, tune back in. And then the other is to either shut down the conversation, educate, or bring some connection in if you think that they're actually open and willing to do that with you.
Yeah, which is wonderful, because what you're talking about is so much of what we talk about often, and I'm including all three of us here, when we're talking about parenting. It's like kind of getting really still and quiet, listening to the inner voice, inner wisdom, inner guidance that we have. When we have an opportunity to make a connection with somebody else and educate somebody else, then we can, but we don't actually need to do that. Really, the foundation of whatever parenting choice we're making, whether it's around breastfeeding or anything else, it's about kind of regulating ourselves, getting quiet, and then acting on those values. So this is right in alignment with all of that too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was also thinking about, there could be parents that are listening, moms that are listening, they're like, wow, that's really helpful to know about the research about like breast milk and that you can go breastfeed full term. There are also probably some parents and moms listening that are like, now that my kid is X number of months or years old, I'm kind of getting to the point where I'm thinking about going back to work or school or having a little bit of my body back. And and yet I still value this thing. How do we balance those two seemingly contradictory forces of my own needs and what I perceive my child needs to be?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, what I've heard often is my own needs versus what should I be giving up for my child? Like, there's a lot that I've done for them, you know, as part of the birthing process and raising them and finding that balance. I think some parents really kind of are trying to figure that out. And this is a very intimate type of balance and connection. So yeah. How do you work with parents to navigate this?
Yeah. This is my wheelhouse. This is where I live. This is what I love to talk about. And because I've gone through this personally, right? With my own two kids that I've breastfed for years, not months. So when we're talking about this, when we first have that baby and they're latching right away, or we're kind of going through maybe some difficulties in those early breastfeeding days, weeks, months even, and then we kind of hit our stride, right? At first, especially if you're somebody who maybe identifies as an attachment parent or someone who's really prioritizing meeting your child's needs holistically, emotionally, all of those things. Breastfeeding is that all-in-one parenting tool from day one, right? It's the thing that will regulate their body, immunological support, food, right? Like heat, skin to skin. We know all of these things. They basically need nothing but you and your body, right? For that first, even 6 months, right? Like when we're talking about that, and we can use the word even ecological breastfeeding to describe that idea of breastfeeding only is the only tool, right? And even in that, talking about that from that perspective, that would be like no pacifiers, no bottles, anything like that. And I know it, for those in the States, many people, and in other parts of the world as well, but you're going back to work very early. So I'm in no way suggesting that it's bad or wrong to not do that. But that is that kind of state where we're meeting the child's needs completely through breastfeeding. And then slowly what ends up happening is what we would call weaning, where we're slowly introducing other tools into our tool belt to meet our child's needs. And over time, we're building that tool belt. And that's really that weaning process is the needs are getting met in more complex and sophisticated and diverse ways. So what happens is we're introducing other things that's happening, right? But along the way, you likely still using breastfeeding a lot. And that can feel like you're the only one who can meet your child's needs. And it's your body or nothing else. So a lot of times what trips people up in this stage is this idea of don't offer, don't refuse. It tends to be touted as the only gentle weaning way, like way to gently wean your child, or you know, way to create some kind of like separation. And the idea is you don't offer and you don't refuse, which essentially fully puts the pressure and the responsibility on your child to regulate when you're breastfeeding and when you're not breastfeeding. But as somebody who was in all of the gentle parenting groups from day one and all of that kind of stuff, this was like the gold standard. Don't offer, don't refuse, right? And it can feel like if I do anything other than that, I'm being harsh or ungentle, or I'm pushing my child away, or I'm not meeting their needs. But here's the reality is that breastfeeding, even attachment relationships, are a dyad, which means there's two parts of one system. So your needs are inherently valuable and important in that relationship too. But I know as an attachment parent, we can start to bristle at that and say, oh, but that means I have to like say no to my child, or like, you know, stop them from doing something that's important to them. But I'd love to offer the idea that when we are stressed and when our needs aren't getting met, our child is stressed out too. And we know this, you know, we can talk about polyvagal theory and even like, you know, Dan Siegel with interpersonal neurobiology and the way that we're really interconnected with our child in this relationship. And both parties are shaping the relationship and shaping each other's minds and all that cool stuff. So when we're stressed out, it's going to stress out our child because they're looking to us for everything, right? Safety, you know, well-being, food, shelter, all of those things. So on this unconscious level, they're picking up on our physiology, on our stress levels, and their best bet at getting their needs met is to ask to breastfeed. Breastfeeding is going to bring that connection, that closeness, right? It's regulating their nervous system. I know that you would know this from your occupational therapy, Cecilia, but like that midline input, right? Like that sucking, like is so regulating for the nervous system. So what we often find and what I've seen over and over again with things like don't offer, don't refuse, or worrying that we can't put those boundaries up or meet our own needs, it kicks off what I call the toddler breastfeeding stress cycle. So we're stressed out. What happens? We get all of these things in our head. And when we're in that moment with our child, they pick up on that. And what it's going to cause to have happen is they get stressed out and they're going to ask to breastfeed more frequently, which is going to help to support them to feel calm and connected and safe. And we know physiologically, breastfeeding ideally also causes lots of good, happy hormones inside of mom too. And would ideally, like in a biological idea, would bring those two together, would bring you together. And it would cause the system to like, whew, relax. Everyone's feeling regulated. But what your little kiddo doesn't know is that you are living in a culture that's put a lot of stories and messages in your head, just like we talked about breastfeeding. And so when they draw close to breastfeed, what we end up in our mind is it's always going to be this way. You know, I'm going to feel this way forever. I'm trapped, but they need me, but I don't know what to do next. And we have this pull, and it can feel like our two options are tough love, right? Where we're just like, well, sorry, honey, or we have to tough it out. And we're like, okay, well, it's just me. I'm the one. I'm going to sacrifice my own needs. This is just a time. And we have this idea like this too shall pass. But, you know, when you're breastfeeding your three-year-old, it's been 3 years of this too shall pass, right? It's like, it's not passing anytime soon. And we know, again, from research, there was a really interesting research done by Dr. Catherine Detweiler, who's an anthropologist, who asked the question, how long would human children breastfeed if there was no cultural, impact, if there was no culture around? And her findings were that we would breastfeed from about 2.5 to age 7. So 21 different species of non-human primates who we share 98% of our DNA with all breastfed until the eruption of permanent molars, which in humans happens around age 5.5 to 7. So mamas, families out there who are breastfeeding their two-year-old and thinking this too shall pass, I just have to stuff this all down, you might have another 5 years ahead of you. You know, it's important to make changes. It's important to prioritize your needs. It's important to do those things. And they can be done in a way that also meets your child's needs. And I would even ask the question, why would nature give us this tool, right, to breastfeed, where we know that there's so many benefits for mom and child? And it's, you know, we love it at the beginning and we love how easy it is to put our child to sleep and we love all these things. Why would it suddenly become something that was so tumultuous and created so much stress inside of us? Right. There's another way. There's another pathway.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. I have my burning question, but I'll wait.
Oh gosh. It's okay. You can.
Okay. My burning question is, okay, then what is it? How do you balance that? How do you find the way to meet your own needs, but also be able to provide what you want to be providing?
And before you answer that, let me just say my comment is thank you for your voice on this topic. Yeah. Because like I'm sure I wasn't alone in really struggling with this when our kids were little, and how difficult it was to figure out that balance. And what I hear you saying is that moms, it's okay for you to have needs. Your needs are valid. You need to take care of yourself in order to be with your child in a fully expressed kind of way, that it's okay for us to have needs and for us to consider ourselves in the circle of people that we care for, and how wonderful the role modeling is for our children, that we also put ourselves on the table as like, I am a person that has needs and they matter. It doesn't mean that, yeah, I always get all of my needs met in every single moment, but at least knowing that it's okay for some of my needs to get met sometimes is probably a message that I didn't get to hear years ago. So thank you for saying what you said. Yeah.
Yeah. I found, Cecilia, that I will answer Jason's question. Absolutely. But I found that what happened to me was that I was in that place. And for me, it showed up as nursing aversion, where I got to the point where it was just this visceral, like I could almost cry as I think about it, this visceral urge to just push my daughter off of me when she would go to latch. And it was so confusing. And I felt so guilty about it. And it was like, okay, this was a thing we loved. This was a thing that was so important. And here I am, just like the total geek about child development and all this early childhood education. And I'm like, these early years are so important. And here I am totally screwing up my kid by hating the thing that they are loving, right? Like, and not being able to provide that to them. Absolutely. And to answer your question, Jason, I went through a journey of really unpacking that and bringing together breastfeeding physiology and attachment theory and neuroscience and all of those pieces to really create that plan forward for myself. But as I was working through that, what I would have happen so often is I'd meet moms and they'd kind of like in this conversation, it would come out that I do like lactation, you know, work or whatever. And they would kind of like test the water and say like, oh yeah, like, oh, I'm still breastfeeding my 3-year-old. Like it would kind of be this thing. And then I'd be like, oh, me too. I'm tandem feeding my 2 kids. And then it would just like tumble out of them. Like all of this, oh my God, there's other people out there. But it's so hard. And I don't know where to turn. And I'm the only one who's ever breastfed for this long. And nobody in my family understands. And their advice, they think they're being helpful, but they just tell me to wean. And it's like, even if I wanted to, how? Like, I don't know how to do that. You know, I say no and my kid tantrums, but then I use breastfeeding to solve the tantrum. So it just kind of creates this like loop, you know? So I really appreciate you saying that, Cecilia. And also it's been something I've heard many, many times, which is literally why I do what I do. So then to answer your question, Jason, about what do we do instead? If we're not in this tough love, tough it out, you know, kind of conundrum, where do we go instead? And my pathway forward that I recommend and would suggest would be what I call the 3 C's, the 3 C breastfeeding method, which would be compassion, curiosity, and creative problem solving. So it's really about starting with self-compassion, starting with tuning back into yourself, building, strengthening that muscle of interoceptive awareness, which is, it covers so many things, but it's like a sense, right? Like it's, you know, like the sense of touch and the sense of smell, but we can also be aware of what's happening inside of our bodies. So we can be aware of our emotions and our, you know, nervous system states. Are we in a state of fight or flight? Are we in a state of, like, where are we? Are we, what pathway are we on, right? If we're talking about polyvagal theory and all that kind of stuff. But also, in a really practical sense, that interoceptive awareness is going to tell you if you're hungry, if you're tired, if you have to go to the bathroom. And as parents with young kids, and I would even say especially as mom with young kids, we deaden our interoceptive awareness because there's just too much. So it's like, okay, maybe I have to go pee, but like, what am I going to do? My child is tantruming and dinner's on the stove and, you know, whatever. Or like, oh, we're running out. And I packed some snacks for my kids and I grabbed a granola bar for myself, but that's all I've eaten today. And, you know, I'm on maternity leave or I'm staying home when we homeschool and we don't have extra cash to hit the fast food, the drive-thru or whatever, right? Like, this is what we do. And over time, we're deadening that ability to tune into ourselves, and our body then has to start screaming at us for us to pay attention and care for ourselves. So it's really difficult to lean back in and listen to your body when you've been ignoring it for so long, and the pain that can be there physically, emotionally, hard to get through. So that's why I always suggest starting with that self-compassion. And inside, I have a big group coaching program that's kind of curriculum-based, and I talk a ton about that and give so many tools for that kind of piece. But that's where I start, is really tuning back into yourself and just offering so much self-compassion. And in that is some education and learning about what's normal and what's not normal and about what all these pieces are, because all of that is providing context and information. Then we move into, so that's the first C, is like self-compassion, and you kind of gain this understanding of yourself. Then you get curious and you start to look at the needs that are present. Okay, well, what is present here? Now I've kind of worked through the self-compassion piece. I can regulate myself. I can become present with myself, with my child. Now I can gather more information. I can look and see what is driving my child to breastfeed. What's happening there? What are my needs that are going unmet? Because if we don't move into that place, if you don't start with compassion, you're going to be stuck in all the shoulds and all of the shoulds, and you're going to be filtering everything through all of those messages instead of coming back into yourself and being present and just being able to be curious with what is right now. And then from that place, that's when we move into creative problem solving. And everyone comes to me for the tips and the tricks of breastfeeding and weaning, and I don't give them. And that's because I cannot tell you what's going to work best for you and your family. I can support you to discover that yourself. But 9 times out of 10, the things that my clients come up with, I've never done, would never have thought to do. And it's exactly perfect for them and their family. And if I give those kind of blanket cookie cutter things like, oh, we'll do this and then do that, or put, you know, if they're co-sleeping, well, you have to move them into their other room first, or you have to have somebody else support them, and all the things that when you Google toddler weaning comes up, like all these generic advice, it's not addressing that root cause need that's in your specific family with your specific dynamics. Maybe your partner works nights. Well, what are you going to do then, right? Like, what's happening? And what I just see over and over again is that when you've gone through that journey of, you know, learning about yourself and regulating yourself, learning about your child, getting curious and present in the moment, then you can creatively problem solve in ways that are perfectly tailored to your specific situation. And the tweaks and the adjustments that you have to make are so small, and they change the direction of where you're going. I've had clients who don't have to do anything. They just work on regulating themselves, and they work on that emotional piece and the understanding. And their 17-month-old that they came to me because they were waking frequently to breastfeed through the night, start sleeping through the night because they're regulated, because they've repaired the relationship, because intuitively mom's just meeting her needs better during the day because she's built up that interceptive awareness, right? She's able to have that voice and be confident and ask for support along the way. And she doesn't even need to do anything because everything's kind of settles in. And then I've had other clients who are like, no, I need to wean fully. I need to wean my 2-year-old. I don't care that it's normal to breastfeed until they're 7. It's really important to me that we do this. So we always go through all of the reasons why, and I need them to be super aware of those things to be confident in their choice. And then from there, they're able to make those changes that feel really good and right for them. And what I hear over and over again is how that kind of support, and I know that even you said earlier, you know, this sounds like parenting stuff. This sounds like what we do with parenting. It is. It's meant to be done in this context. I believe we're supposed to be, I use those very, you know, but biologically speaking, it's normal to be breastfeeding until 2.5 or 7, right? So that early parenting is kind of meant to unfold in a context of breastfeeding. So when we do that, we're building real parenting tools that serve us for a lifetime, right? These are things that are so much easier to exercise and build and get familiar with when your child is 3 versus when they're 16, right? So there's a real beautiful opportunity at this stage to do this work, right? Because a lot of times what people do is they just want to, what I would say, blame breastfeeding, right? Breastfeeding's a problem. If we just stop breastfeeding, then everything gets better. And so they focus on just managing that behavior. They treat it like a habit or a behavior. And it's like, we just need to get rid of that thing. But what I do is take this holistic view of this relationship and build from there. And then from that point, the changes are small. And from those small changes, you've created a foundation that's going to continue to serve you for the duration of your parenting for decades to come.
That was a long answer. No, it's fantastic because it really led us to that spot that you just ended with, which it really sets up a nice pattern, a nice habit for the future of parenting that you'd be able to carry on into all kinds of other situations where take care of yourself, look at what's going on, identify, be compassionate with yourself, then, you know, look at what's going on and identify what those needs are, and then come up with the solutions. And those solutions and those needs are not just for the kid, but also including yourself in that.
Yeah.
And if we use that model for parenting for the future, for whether it's, you know, needing to figure out how to get the kid in the car because I got a doctor's appointment to go to, or school, or when they're 16, or when it's about social media, or it's, I mean, fill in the blank on any of these problems. Mm-hmm. It all fits so nicely with that. And what a great place to start practicing that, and for kids to really be able to viscerally experience it. And so I just really want to commend you on how you've been able to set that up here early on for kids and in the child-parent relationship. So very, very happy to hear that, because I think it does create a real nice foundation for the future.
Yeah. For the people that are just listening to the audio version, I've been nodding my head like vigorously during this whole thing. Yeah, I just love how, what Jason said, how, and Jenna, what you've said about how, like, looking at being curious, looking at what need is the breastfeeding meeting? How are all the other, what are all the other tools? What are all the other ways that we can meet those same needs? Looking at, for us as moms, like tuning into what are the needs that we have? How can we, serve ourselves better, and then creatively with whatever unique configuration is in your family, in your life, with the work or sleep or all the different variables, like we are each, as parents, we are each kind of the expert on our kids, the expert on our own life, our own family. We're the best qualified to figure out what that baby step is going to be. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be forever. We can tweak it. We can change it, like all these things. So
baby step. I saw what you did there. Baby steps. Yeah, I saw what you did there. Baby step. Yeah.
Oh. Oh gosh. So this has been a fantastic conversation. As we wrap up, like, do you have any final words or a big ask for the audience, the people that have been listening to this?
Yeah, I feel like I covered that real, like, foundational principle, and like that method that I apply to all of these things. So I really want people to remember that and recognize that. And I do go over and I really break those things down in more detail in my free workshop, which I can share more about. But so if that was intriguing to you, I would say, like, please go and watch that and glean more from that, because there's a lot of things there. And I would just love to kind of, like, highlight and reiterate that when you're looking, like, if you are starting out and you're saying, I want to wean, this relationship needs to come to an end for whatever reason, as you do the work to become compassionate with yourself, to look at the needs that are present, and to look at what problem, like what ways you can solve those problems, be open to what is going to come, because you may decide to continue to wean and you may not. And all of those things are so valid, but that's, like, I support parents to always start with that. Why do you want to wean? You do not owe anyone else an explanation for why you want to breastfeed or why you want to wean. You don't owe me. You don't owe Jason and Cecilia. You don't owe your doctor. You don't owe anyone an explanation. Your mom, no one. But you, if you're not aware of it yourself, you don't know what is driving that desire. And if it's distress, that's driving that desire to wean, and stress, distress and stress, then what you're going to do is likely create more stress. You're not really getting to the root of that issue. And I can say that because breastfeeding itself, the act of breastfeeding, isn't going to cause distress in your family, right? There's other things that are happening there. And sometimes you can eliminate those stressors in your, you know, that are there, and breastfeeding will relax. It will start to feel good. It will start to, all that stuff. And Jason, you said earlier that breastfeeding is this really kind of, like, intimate relationship, and you were, like, talking about that kind of vulnerability. And it's so true. when I talk about nursing aversion, that feeling, that urge that I had to like push my child off, the skin crawling, sometimes we take that as a cue of like, uh-oh, this must mean like my body's wise. And we think we're tuning into our intuition and we're saying, well, that must mean we're done. And this would be something I would want to highlight is that in those moments, in that moment there, it is literally like the most vulnerable, intimate place that you could be with your child, who is the epitome of innocence. And a lot of times our pain and our emotional distress bubbles up in those moments. And when we're struggling to deal with it, and I say this like absolutely from myself too, our brain, so we have this kind of nervous system state almost, right? Like it's all coming to the surface there, and we start to try to make sense of it. And so it can kind of, for lack of a better word, almost be projected onto our kids. So it's always important to take that time to really look at that why and what is and what's going on in a bigger context in your life. Pretty much never fails that if a mom comes to me with nursing aversion, there's a lot more going on in her life, in all of that. And sometimes she decides that eliminating breastfeeding is a way to support herself. And that feels good and right to her. And that's amazing. And I'm there to cheer her on and support her in whatever that looks like. And other times there's some tools and things that she can feel equipped with to navigate those other pieces. And it takes the pressure off of the breastfeeding relationship. And she's able to feel good and secure in that too. So that's kind of what I want. Like if it's a big, big ask, or like, you know, just kind of one more thing to share, it's just be open to what might come in those in that time as you're doing this work. And, you know, stay curious, be flexible, and all those pieces, because yeah, it's a lot, right? And you don't know where the journey is going to take you.
I think that's a really important point that you bring up there about being curious, thinking about whether it's time to wean being this solution that's going to solve all these problems that maybe it will, but maybe it's not really the thing that's causing the problems. It may be something else. And the opportunity to be curious about that and be supported in that process of asking those questions and really looking authentically at it. I think that's a really important point. I've heard it from moms a lot because there's a lot of stuff going on for them. And this is one of them that seems to be causing it, but underneath it, maybe it really wasn't. And addressing some of those others allows for them to continue with something they really value. And so thank you for bringing that up. I think that's a really important point that is easily overlooked. And you have a lot of resources. You've got I love this topic because it's something that I've heard from many mothers that, like you kind of described, kind of like talk about it on the side a little bit, just test the waters to see if it's okay to talk about with other parents. And you really are just being able to bring this up and have this be a conversation to have and to support them in it. And for it to be explored in a way that's doesn't have a lot of the baggage, I think, that that are in society. How can people find out more about this? You mentioned your free workshop that you have. I know you have other resources as well. What's the best way for people to find out more about this?
Absolutely. So there's my website, ownyourparentingstory.com. And it's kind of, you know, the hub. You'll be able to explore lots of things from there. But just to highlight a couple of things that they can go and check out, I have a podcast, Start to Stop Toddler Breastfeeding. And there's tons of episodes on there, interviews with other experts, interviews with moms who have been through this journey. I share my own story. So there's lots of things to go and explore there. My Instagram is as well. And then, yes, my free workshop would be a great place to turn to as well, which I really, really go through that methodology. And I cover three big mistakes, with quotes, that moms make often in their extended breastfeeding journey that just adds that pressure, makes weaning more difficult, and also will support you up for success if you're considering tandem feeding, which is breastfeeding your toddler and your newborn, or even triandem feeding, which is breastfeeding two older kids and a newborn. So you're not crazy if that's something that you think might interest you. I've done it. So that's all in that workshop there, which is at ownyourparentingstory.com/workshop.
Awesome. We'll put a link to that here in the speaker notes. And I encourage everyone listening to this, that if this speaks to you or you know someone that is, that would really resonate with this, just share it with them, because Jenna does an amazing job, as you've heard here, of just supporting moms. And Jenna, thank you for all the work that you're doing with this. It makes such a difference in the lives of parents and the kids in the long run, beyond just breastfeeding, but also the stress that it brings with it in trying to navigate these waters and just easing that for families. So thank you for that. And thank you for spending the time here talking to us and everyone else.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.